Okay. All right. So you were saying, okay.
I think that's where it went off.
Yeah, when I was asking, you said that Jenny knew these guys that with all this
power. Yeah. I think she meant the group, Howard Brown and Bruce Fuller and Jeff Karples, who was the top assistant to the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare in Washington, decided to form a foundation. And this still exists, and the name of it has just escaped me for the moment. Somehow, Jenny knew some of these powerful men, Jeff Karples, Dick Fela, who later became the first gay man ever to be appointed an administrative judge of the city of New York, and the administrative judges run a lot of things, you know. So anyway, so the foundation was formed several years later, like in 1979 or 80. From this group emerged the idea, from this powerful male group, Jenny's best friends in the movement were always gay men, not gay women. She didn't hang out with men. Her idea of fun was the wealthy gay men and those earning big incomes would rent a limo and go out to Coney Island and ride the Cyclone. This was, and drink champagne in the limo.
Those stories.
So, you know, no one knew Jenny. How could you know Jenny? She wasn't around. You know, she was somewhere else. She was with gay men. So anyway, they decided that they wanted to form the first gay and lesbian political action caucus, a PAC. And this PAC would influence elections in New York State, a statewide PAC, and national elections if possible, depending on how much money they and all their buddies contributed to the PAC. So I got a call from Linda Simmons. Linda Simmons.
Familiar name.
Linda Simmons was lovers with my old friend Nath Rockhill. Nath Rockhill got our book published. And Nath Rockhill came out of our CR Group 1, which is another story. You don't need to go into that. That's been covered a lot in different publications. So I'm giving you new stuff. So Nath Rockhill and Linda Simmons had gotten together. And Linda Simmons knew, that's how the connection. Linda Simmons was, you know, was at that point vice president of this foundation that built housing for lower middle income people in New York. She later became president of it, Phipps Houses, it's called. So Linda knew these powerful gay men. And the men came to her and said, well, look, you know, we have this guy, Nick Bowman. He's a social worker, but he's like number two at this big social workplace in New York. We've got him, but we need a woman to be co-chair of this thing. So I get this phone call from Nath and Linda. Sydney, will you be co-chair? It's going to be called NYPAC, New York Political Action Caucus, the first gay and lesbian PAC in the world, in the country, in rare. So I said, oh God, I'm really not active in that way anymore. I'm trying to earn a living, you know. So eventually I said yes, and I became co-chair of NYPAC. Nick Bowman was one of the most, and we both worked at the same place.
In your real life?
Yes.
Which was?
Well, my real life was the movement. Let's not be funny.
But where were, no, but I meant, where did you work?
Oh God, I'm trying to think of the name of it.
What'd you do?
Well, the biggest one in New York is the Community Service Society, and they were just down the block from us. This was the community, it was a citywide, they tested and pioneered various services citywide, and their specialty was information and referral. Anyway, they were not as big or as rich as Community Service Society, but they were a very, very well-established, broad-based, private social policy, social care agency. But they usually got ideas for things, and they'd run demo programs. Anyway, Nick was the number two person at this place, and I was involved in a program to hire people in a jobs program. And we hired people who were on welfare, and we trained them, and we did all of this stuff. Anyway, so I was at the bottom of the heap, and Nick was number two at the top of the heap at this place. And we became co-chairs of NYPAC. So we would visit all day long about NYPAC business. And NYPAC, all the people on the board who appeared from God knows where were babies. They had never been in the movement. They'd never been on the board of directors. I sort of wondered, where do these people come from? Except there were representatives, for example, of the Attorney General. Alan Roscoff was on the board. Yeah. and somebody else from somewhere else. So the political ties were there. Now, I never liked that attorney, that not attorney general, but who was it? It was the state, not the district. Not the district attorney, who's very famous, but the New York State Attorney General. And he had his fingers everywhere. And one of his main fingers was Alan Roscoff, and his finger was in this, he was on the board. And another guy who was Ethan Ghetto, people like that. But the rest of the board were babies. Nick Bowman was a gorgeous man. He's one of the most gorgeous men I've ever seen in my life. Physically gorgeous. And thought he was hot shit. He was, however, not maybe as experienced as he should have been to be in this position. What the powerful men did was they didn't want to do things themselves, so they would set things up so other people did it. So
it hasn't changed much.
So anyway, so Nick was the person that they chose because he spoke beautifully, and he dressed beautifully, and he looked beautiful, and he had this innocent position, you know. Of course, he went to the S&M bars and did all those things at night, but all of the powerful guys in New York were into S&M. Gay Activist Alliance was heavily S&M. But very interesting, you know, political activism and S&M. So, Kate was, as a matter of fact, in an early movie discussing S&M with some of these guys from the Gay Activist Alliance. Brilliant little film. Nobody's seen it for 30 years. Brilliant, the documentary videotape. So there was a shadow power group that you never saw. You know, I didn't. And then there was the board, which were mostly inexperienced people, except for the three or four people I've named. Nick Bowman was inexperienced. Okay, so we had a very successful year. All of these guys in three-piece suits who worked at the Fed, you know, and who worked on Wall Street and who were lawyers would come to the meetings, and we got enough money, and indeed we interviewed all the state assembly and candidates, and everybody from the state. We interviewed the candidates for governor, who included Marianne Krupsack at that time, and others, but it was very much a male thing, and women were very down, and I was very much considered a token co-chair. And there were, you know, accountants, and it was heavy duty. And these people were people who already, to my face, called the National Gay Task Force and the Gay Liberation Front dinosaurs. We were already the dinosaurs. These were the new cutting edge. The successful professional gay man had emerged. And Nath and Linda were very close to them. Okay. So after I became co-chair, I was summoned to Tick Fela's large apartment off the park on the right on Central Park West. He had a right off of it, not more than a block. He had a large apartment. He had a houseboy. We had dinner, Dick and I, and one other person, his friend, three of us at this huge dining table being served by this houseboy. And Dick interviewed me, I guess, to see if I was satisfactory enough to be a token co-chair for this group. So because I was a token, I told Nath this. I said, you know, Nath, I'm just there as a figurehead sort of person, you know. Well, what happened was that Nick Bowman had a good friend who loved him, and a slightly older guy named Jerry, who was an accountant who lived around the corner from me. I was at 5th and 11th. And he lived on something like 12th between 5th and 6th. And Jerry adored Nick. All the guys adored Nick. Nick was like the Marlboro man that Larry Kramer wrote up in Faggots. Nick was the guy. You had to fuck Nick, or, you know, you could just die. You might as well resign as a gay man. And thousands did fuck him. He's probably dead. I don't know. I first heard about AIDS when I was in NIDAC, way before it was called AIDS. But that's another story. So Jerry wanted Nick to be happy. Jerry was an accountant who was treasurer of my family, and he wanted to make Nicky Baby very happy. So he said to Nicky Baby, let's rent a house on Fire Island. Now, Nick's salary was low because because here he was in a private social service agency, and even his number two, if he was making $40,000 a year, I'd be surprised. So, and he had a nice apartment, and he went to the bars. He poured tons of money out every night, you know, in different bars, looking gorgeous and doing God knows what. So Jerry said, Dick said, you know, like, a house on fire, a big house on fire, how? And Jerry said, don't worry about it. What Jerry did was borrow the NYPAC treasury to pay for the house on fire. He was a CPA. He figured, how will they know? We're not going to meet during the summer. NYPAC doesn't meet in the summer, and I'll put the money back in the fall. Some clients will pay me, and I'll put the money back in the fall. And we'll have a party all summer. And what happened was, Dick Fala, Jeff Carpels, everybody noticed that Nick Bowman, who had not a dime, had this big house on Fire Island. And it didn't take them very long to figure out how Nick had gotten it. They traced it to Jerry. So I was told about this, and I made sure that another CPA was brought in and went over the books, and sure enough, it was true. But the word went out. The power men decided Nick had to be done away with. It's called Kill the Leader, Summary Execution. So a meeting was called, and then I heard that I was to be done away with too. And I thought, fuck it, why? I'm this fucking token. As soon as I heard about the problem, I got another CPA in there. I was not fiscally responsible for this organization. I didn't have fiduciary responsibility for this organization. Jerry the treasurer did. He was a fucking CPA, you know? So I got pretty mad at that point. And I had a good friend on the board. We had formed another group. I was the first gay or lesbian person ever to be appointed to a community planning board in the city of New York. I was appointed to Community Planning Board 2, which is Greenwich Village, part of Chinatown. Anyway, whatever. It's considered the model community planning board. They brought people from the Russian Politburo into observance. We were considered the model of democratic behavior in the city of New York, right? Political as hell. I was, meanwhile, getting to be known in the Democratic Party and all this stuff. So I was pretty mad that the powers that be had decided to execute me, too. So I made a plan. And I knew it would be dirty and filthy. I knew Ethan Ghetto was a dirty fighter, and he was designated as the attack dog. So I made this plan. Steve Severson and I were co-chairs of the group. Eventually, a gay or lesbian person was appointed to every community planning board in Manhattan, from the tip of Manhattan all the way through to the ocean. And we did something never before done in community board politics. Steve and I organized this into a group, and we met and decided all the issues and shared information. And they were terrified of us, because community planning boards are supposed to be these little community volunteers, and we were being political. Okay, that's another story. Steve and I were buddies. I mean buddies. Steve Severson from California, from an old family in California. We were close like this. So Steve came to me and he said, Sydney, you're on the list too. I said, I'm on the list. Why? I'll just, you know, I mean, I didn't even want to do this thing. I had to be talked into it. I don't have the time anymore to do crap. I'm trying to survive financially now. So I made a plan. So we went into the meeting. I was chairing the meeting of the board. And so Ethan said, we're not going to have an agenda. We have other business to do tonight. And there was another little guy connected to some other politico there. And I said, well, you know, let's do this in an orderly way. He slammed his hand on the table and said, I'm here to play hardball. And I said, I'll play hardball too. Just, you know, I said, I'm the one with the bat right now because I'm chairing this meeting. And so I had learned another trick, like the one I used at Robert Jewell Order trick, like the one I used to get the money from NOW for the Lesbian Rights Task Force, 1% of all their budget in Philadelphia. My trick I had also learned from NOW was something called a committee of the whole. In other words, if you want something to be off, I said, the only decent thing to do is not to have anything in the minutes. I said, this is a person's reputation, meaning Nick, is on the line here. On the line here, and mine too. So we're, but anyway, let me back up a minute, run my visual tape backwards in my head. When I walked in that night, in the basement of some building where we were holding this execution meeting on the board, and these little babies on the board were like at a tennis match, they had no idea what was going on. None. I walked in, and sitting there at the table where the board was meeting, uninvited by me or Nick, was Jenny Apuzzo. And I thought, oh dear, the Terminator has arrived.
You knew of her reputation before. Okay.
Yeah, she's sitting there looking like a mafioso queen. You know, tough. She sat right across from me, had direct eye contact the whole time. So I thought, oh shit, the Terminator, this is really serious. There's no way we're going to get out of this one, you know. And I thought Nick was an asshole and should go, but I didn't know why I had to go. So I said, you know, people's reputations are on the line tonight. This is about money. I convene a committee of the whole. They said, what's a committee of the whole? I said, a committee of the whole is off record. No minutes are taken of any kind, no record of any kind, and you can say anything you want. And we're going to do this not on the record. Anything on the record about NYPAC is going to be orderly. If people want to resign, fine. There's going to be no record. So they did it, and we went into the committee of the whole. I convened the committee of the whole, and I stood up and said, I resign, and handed the gavel to Nick and walked out of the room. I wasn't going to stay there and watch them rip him apart. And they did. I went out and sat in a chair and smoked, and Steve would come out every 15 minutes and say, it's bloody, it's brutal, it's awful. And I'd say, fuck, 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 and he'd go back in. And eventually I went out and got a taxi and went home. They were there a long time. They breathed that guy.
Nick.
But what I resented about Jenny was also in my life in another way. I had a job for a while. I was telling last night about my little touch of pixie dust, White House pixie dust, because I worked for Jan Peterson in Brooklyn, and Jan became Mitch Costanza. Mitch was the first ever female one of the top six assistants to a president, ever. And Jan left me as acting director of the agency in Brooklyn, and went to Washington to be her assistant. And I was also on the Carter transition team because I had been policy and management right hand to the Commissioner of Mental Health, Mental Retardation and Alcoholism Services of the City of New York, and was the Commissioner's surrogate at many meetings and things like that, wrote speeches and stuff like that. So I went down to, June was head of the mental health part of the Carter transition team. She went into HEW from the mental health end to assess everything. And I was down there with her. So anyway, when I was in Brooklyn at the agency before Carter got elected, Jenny was going to run for assembly for Brooklyn. Jenny was connected to the bosses in Brooklyn. Another reason I didn't care for her was she was connected to, Brooklyn has very dirty politics, and the bosses run everything, and Jenny got connected. So they said, okay, you can run in this certain district for the assembly. And that certain district contained our little agency. And Jenny came into the office where I was acting director and listened to a young gay woman architect who worked there who was not altogether glued together. And this woman told Jenny that I was going to steal the agency and move it to Manhattan. Well, when Jan Peterson left to go to Washington, she took me aside, and we had lunch or something, and she said to me, if the board of directors of my agency try to shut us down, take the people and move it to Manhattan if you have to, but save my agency, Sydney, whatever you do. So I said, okay, I would. I wasn't going to move the agency to Manhattan, certainly not for my personal gain, you know. But this was a plan that Jan had set in motion in case the local board in Brooklyn decided to shut us down, or shut down the political part of our operation. So this young woman architect, Ellen Friedman, told Jenny this completely out of context, that Sydney the bad person. So Jenny decided to kick my butt around in Brooklyn too. So I'd already had that experience when I walked into the board meeting that night, and here was the Terminator, you know, sent by Dick Fayola. How Jenny got connected with these powerful gay men, I don't know, but she did. And that was the beginning of her rise in New York City, like assistant health commissioner, and then to the state, and then to the federal. That plus the attorney general I didn't like was, I think, a Brooklyn guy. The guy that, you know, that Ethan Ghetto was his bird dog.
So when you say she kicked your butt around there, she had confrontations with her?
No, she created things that I had confrontations with the staff and the board.
Behind backs?
She decided to believe Ellen Friedman. She never asked me, she never talked to me directly. She never called me on the phone and said, what do you mean, what's going on? I've heard this rumor. Just like when she came in to be the Terminator, she never called me and said, Sydney, what's going on? Were you involved in this money thing? Did you know about it? Why didn't you know about it? How would I know? We said in the spring, we're not going to meet all summer. And Jerry could sign on the account as treasurer. And Nick was the other co-chair, so he could sign on the account. I didn't know they had done this for the summer. So Jenny never communicated with me personally about these two very important things in my life. Jenny could have stopped me from being executed. I mean, it's fucking embarrassing. If money has been taken and I'm to be executed too, the implication is I'm involved. So, as far as I was concerned, Jenny was not to be dealt with because she's not to be trusted and not pro-woman, but an agent of these men. So that's the story about Jenny. And later she came into the National Gay Task Force, and Barbara was still on the board, and Barbara agrees with me absolutely. They did Lucia Valeska in a bad way. They could have gotten Lucia to resign, but they do these killings, you know, these horrible things.
That's the name I was thinking. Lucia, what's her last name?
Valeska.
Yeah, and then Jenny got it from her.
Of course. But Jenny did her in with the backing of the same men who had come into the National Gay Task Force via the foundation that was founded. They weren't really on the task force, but they were the money guys behind the foundation.
Betty Powell was involved in the National Gay Task Force.
When? I don't know.
I don't know. Jenny told me that the National Gay Task
Force. Well, she probably
got
Betty on the board to be her eyes and ears on the board. You know, Betty was her lover.
That book says she was in, she was the...
Probably, but I was probably drifting around by then. I had so many things on my plate. I was in Democratic politics. I had an important position in the city of New York myself. I later went and was the first person I was later assigned, although that was not a salary, to go into the Human Rights Commission when Bob Livingston was on it. He was beginning to die of AIDS, one of the first people to die of AIDS. And I went in as a volunteer, but I was given an office and a phone and everything. It was like I worked there. And began to say to the Human Rights Commission, why don't you protect gay people? Let's talk about this. Let's study this. And we had hearings. I was appointed by Koch to be on various things. You know, we had meetings in City Hall of our little group. So I was in a power group, but not that. It overlapped partially. Like, Nath Rockhill became Dick Fayola's assistant. See, everything overlapped. It always does, doesn't it?
Right.
But, you know, anyway, Jenny played a role that has paid off big for her. Big. But I didn't like it. And it wasn't feminist. It wasn't lesbian feminism. It wasn't anything. I mean, I acted in these areas as a lesbian feminist. That's what I took into it, was a certain set of values. Jenny was coming from someplace else.
And you got a little disillusioned in there.
No, not disillusioned. Pissed. Don't get mad at Getty.
So I didn't realize you were so politically, I mean, you were like really in the trenches of the political.
Yeah, I was asked to run for delegate for the Carters to the whatever. The nominating the thing wherever they go convention. And I went in, this was a school on the east side, lower east, I mean not lower east side, but between the village, Bobby Kennedy had the first floor, and all the gay people were for Bobby Kennedy. And there was a staircase, and I had to go by everybody and walk upstairs to the small classroom where the Carter people were going to meet, because this is where I was. So I walked in, there were hundreds of people downstairs for Bobby Kennedy, and the gay people practically booed me when I walked upstairs. And I walked in, and there was the whole fucking Democratic National Committee, every member of it from New York State was sitting in that room, and the head of the party from Manhattan and Brooklyn and everybody was sitting in that room. And I was the only gay person who ran for delegate. I almost made it. I lost by a few votes. I was interviewed for the paper. They say, did you feel bad about losing? I said, hell no. It's my first time out and I did good. But I was for Carter. I knew fucking Carter was going to win. I knew the minute I walked in that room and saw who was in that room, he was going to win.
He had all the rock and rollers behind him. Well, Bobby Kennedy got killed, though. That's why, right? I mean.
But I mean, in New York State. I knew how powerful. I'm in the state.
Well, have you ever thought about writing about this stuff?
Tell me why it's important.
I don't know why it is.
I'll tell Joanna.
I just wondered if you had. I mean, because you saw so much of this from the beginning, the way all of this came together.
Oh, sure. From being a scared dyke who wanted a decent life and going to this Episcopal minister to interviewing Robert Wagner because he was going to, because he was good. I don't mean, he had meetings with everybody. Cuomo, Bob Wagner Jr. I mean, between the Community Planning Board, the Democratic Party, you know, various things. Meanwhile, I was still active in feminism as a whole, lesbian feminism. You know, it's 12 years of my life, that's all I did.
See, I didn't know that. So I'm glad that I have all of this because I had no idea that you,
most people know me from one place or two places. They don't realize I was in 10 places.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I would get calls from all kinds of powers that be, you know, we need a gay person for this, who do you recommend, or, you know, how do we reach out to the gay community. I held the first meeting in City Hall. Herb Rickman was the campaign manager for Koch, and Herb became Koch's top assistant, and among his many portfolios was the gay and lesbian community, because Herb was a gay man. He was from a big Jewish foundation world. Money. I mean, he was used to this. And Herb Rickman said, look, Koch ain't doing so well with the gays, you know, lesbians. What can we do?
Hmm? He is gay, isn't
he? I don't know. Probably, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know it.
Yeah.
And I don't say nothing but facts.
Right.
And so Herb Rickman said, give me an idea. And I said, you know, Herb, you're from social service background and foundation background. I said, are you aware that in every borough of this city, there are wonderful, non-funded, nickel and dime, gay social service places. Agency is too big a word for these places. Little storefronts, things that meet in people's houses. He said, no, I didn't know that. So I said, well, how about a meeting in the big meeting room that's just off of the mayor's office? And he said, okay, do it. So I got the addresses and names of everything from Sage to something in the Bronx and Brooklyn and Queens and all over, and put together, we invited 50 agencies and they all came, and then Herb Rickman realized how big it was going to be. He said, oh God, what's the fallout from this? He said, are they going to behave themselves? I said, these are wonderful people. I said, the only possible fallout is good. So I got them all in the room, and Herb came in and I sat next to him and fed him like little notes about who was speaking and who was this and who was that. And he conducted the meeting. And it was fabulous. Everybody talked about their ideas and what was needed, which was good because AIDS was happening, but it had no name. It had no name. But the gay men were already very afraid, and two or three, Bob Livingston had died or was dying, and others were sick, but they didn't know why. They didn't know what it was. But I stayed after one night after a board meeting of NIPAC before the big execution, and Nick Bowman convened a secret meeting afterwards of the guy who wrote the first gay history from Harvard, Tobias.
Oh, right.
he was there, Nick was there, I was there, and two or three other men were there. And the subject, I was the only woman there, and the subject was, gay men are getting sick, we don't know what it is, and they're dying, and this thing is infectious, it spreads. And our straight people got to round us up and put us in concentration camps. But they were scared. They were really scared.
All right. So, speaking of Tobias, did you know Sheila, is that her name, Sheila Tobias?
Yes.
Was she around all of that?
Kate and I, and a couple of people from Columbia Women's Liberation. In the early days, Sheila taught at Cornell, and she got permission to teach some women's, Sheila invented women's studies.
Oh, okay, that's what I wanted to know.
And we went to that first conference she held at Cornell.
But she wasn't gay, right? She's not gay. Too bad.
I don't know, but I don't think so. I have no
feeling. I just wanted to fit her in, because I saw her at that thing of Kate's, and I'd never heard of her before.